This video is a prerequisite to a symposium edition of the Taiwan Special Series, and that's where I interview someone on the phone. That person I'm talking to has seen this video before we went on the phone, and I'm hoping that you do also, because this is where I explain, this is the prerequisite symposium video. I talk about getting to the point and why I want to know the conclusion before the facts. I'm going to explain what that means, conclusion first, arguments later, and why I think that way and how this is different from the Socratic teaching method. There's a difference. It's conclusion first, and then there's Socrates teaching. And there might be others, like lecture slowly, like line by line teaching, and then get to your point at the end. Like that's another teaching method, but I'm not even going to get into that. Mainly, I'm going to talk about the Socratic teaching method. And it's the method that lawyers use, and it's for good reason. There's another video series that I have called, it's about critical thinking. It's this critical thinking series. It's on my YouTube channel, and it should be listed in some playlists next to this video here. So look up the critical thinking piece, because, you know, credit where due. Jordan Peterson says a lot of people don't know how to think. So very few people, some people can, they can sit in, you know, by themselves and think. Critical thinking is what I call that. A lot of us need to have dialogue with other people, but some people do know how to think. Now, I am one of those people who can sit by myself in a room and I can think without other people there. But the reason I can do that is because I have spent so much time talking to other people before. And I continue to talk to people. The thing that makes me think, the thing that gives me a new idea, is not asking me a question. I've been through the questions. Questions bore me. Questions have already been answered in some book, and I've seen enough that I get that and understand that. The things that cause me to think, that provoke thought for Jesse Steele, are facts and testimony and conclusions. If you just tell me what your conclusion is going to be after 2 hours, I'm going to have new ideas. But all up until that, I might fall asleep because I've heard it 1,000 times before. And that's hard to hear because you think, Jesse, who do you think you are? Well, I've traveled the world and I've spent a decade in Asia trying to break out of my own cultural boxed thinking. And even in America, I would talk with people far more educated than myself as much as I possibly could. In Chicago, I would ask the person on the L on the subway system who's standing next to me what they thought about life or what their opinion was, you know, if they had any ideas on anything. I said, what do you do? How's your life in Chicago? I would learn everywhere I could. And I would talk with people, and you can only do that so long before it pays off. That's not a waste of time. If you talk to people who have studied officially or unofficially, they know more than you do. If you talk to them, you will learn. You will learn, and you will have fewer questions, and it will become difficult for people to cause you to think because you've already been thinking about an issue. So I'm going to explain to you why it's virtuous, not why Jesse's the all-smart person. I still learn. I'm looking for something that's going to cause me to think. I'm looking for someone to provoke thought in me. The only things that do that are someone's story. So this is my story, what happened to me. True or not, it's what that person's story is. And facts, like you can prove it, like this is a fact, that will make me think. And just telling me what the conclusion of your argument's going to be, that will make me think. So I'm going to explain why and what's going on with this difference here. Let's say you've got a person here, and you know, he doesn't know a lot of stuff. He's starting to do his critical thinking thing, assuming you've watched the critical thinking videos or you will later. Well, he's starting to think, but he doesn't have a lot of stuff to think about. Well, he's going to ask the teacher here, and here the teacher is wearing kind of a robe, and he's he's gonna look like Socrates, so he's got a big beard, and he's got his there he's all Socratesed up, and he's gonna ask questions. He's gonna throw questions. So whenever our little pupil here who's trying to think, whenever he talks, our Socrates guy here is going to answer with another question. And that's going to cause him to think. He's going to think, and then that's going to lead him to say something else. And our Socrates guy is going to answer with another question. And it's going to go around and around. And this guy, he likes that because he's learning. He's learning how to think. That's the Socratic teaching method. It's one way of explaining the Socratic teaching method. Now, that's not always appropriate. The assumption here is that the person who's being Socrates, as I might say, he's wearing the Socrates hat, again, referring to my critical thinking series. This guy has the Socrates hat, the Socrates outfit on. And he knows more. He really does. He's older, he's been around, he knows a lot. This young guy, he hasn't been around much. Maybe he's been around more than other people, but he hasn't been around as long as Socrates. And so they already have this agreement that the Socrates guy knows more. And that the younger guy asking questions, who's curious, knows less, but he wants to know more. Socrates is not asking questions because he's curious. He's asking questions because the student is curious. And they both agree to this. It's mutual consent. It's something they both want. If they both don't want it, and if they both don't agree that Socrates knows more, then it's not going to work. If someone tries to do this, if the guy with the Socrates outfit on tries to do this, but this guy doesn't accept that the Socrates guy knows more, it's not going to work. In fact, that's an insult. If you ever start barking Socrates type questions at people who don't already think that you know more, who aren't coming to you for help to think on their own, if you do that, you're going to insult them and they're going to be angry at you, and they should be angry at you, and what you did was wrong. That's not how to be. Now, when we're learning about something, if we go to the courtroom, in fact, I was in an informal hearing once about I'd flipped my car over. And on terrible ice, terrible intersection, lots of freak accidents, no salt trucks, lot of strange stuff going on. But I'd rolled my car over, and I'd been given a ticket, and the police officer wrote the accident scene incorrectly. He was quick to bill me for money, but he wasn't quick to try to do a good job. And he had problems. He was getting pressure from his boss to make sure that every accident has a ticket, so the county can make money, probably. So I was in this court scene, and I was showing the pictures of the car, and I had my witness, and I had a picture from the newspaper, and it all contradicted what the police officer did. Now, what I should have done was I should have gone to the police officer privately outside before the hearing, told him I had evidence, and he would have gone home, and that would have been the end of it. That was the first thing. I wish that someone had told me that. I had already told the magistrate at the informal hearing before that, and he didn't care. He wanted to win and get his money. So that was ultimately his problem because he was supposed to tell me that. He should have said, "Jesse, if you do have evidence, just tell the police officers, and then it'll rule in your favor quickly, and they'll save face, and it's better for everybody." But the magistrate didn't tell me that. And I'm telling you this because this is how to have arguments and disagreements fairly and properly. What I should have said in the hearing was that I have a right to appeal. And that would have gone to something like above a hearing, something like a trial, and that's where the police officer could have lost credibility, and that the judge would have at least ruled in my favor at the formal hearing. So, but what I my conclusion was, I never had a conclusion. That was my weakness. The reason that I had to pay the ticket when the police officer did very sloppy, bad police work, adding insult to injury. I mean, I totaled the car. I mean, did you think I didn't learn my lesson? Nobody got injured, and I was not speeding. It was a dangerous intersection because the county doesn't do their job. But I didn't get to the point. The point was that I had a right to appeal, and this makes the police department look bad. That should have been my point. And I never said that. I just presented my arguments. And so in the end, I lost. In that trial, or not trial, it was a hearing, excuse me, I misspoke. It was a courtroom, though, and they had formal proceedings. I mean, I had to present my newspaper to the prosecutor who is sitting right next to me, and I represented myself. And so the prosecutor and the police officer were sitting next to each other. I had to give them the evidence before I could give it to the judge. And as I'm showing the pictures, and I have my witness who got up and described the traffic accident and what he saw. And as I'm showing all this, the judge said more and more to me, get on with it. Okay, I acknowledge, I see. What's your point? Tell me what your point is. Now, anyone who understands law will tell you this. Listen to the Supreme Court oral arguments. The justices in the Supreme Court do not want to hear reasons why. Now, I'm going to go over this and explain. There's a different perspective. First, say what your conclusion is. Conclude first. Even when I started this video, I told you what we were going to talk about. It's a lot easier to understand someone when you know what they're going to prove to you. Right? This is my point in this video. Oh, that's interesting. I want to hear your reasons why now. Conclude first. This is number one. Conclude. That's step one. Maybe I should draw an ST here to get the idea. First, conclude. I don't mean come to a judgment. I mean when you're explaining yourself. I'm not talking about, I mean, when you make a judgment, it's like you don't know, and then you think about it, and then you make your opinion, and now you've decided what you think about. There, you need to listen first. But I'm talking about when you're explaining your idea to someone else. Tell them the conclusion first. And also, first, get to the point. That's the name of my 100 word weekly podcast and column. Get to the point. Say what your point is. Say what your point is. And first, there's three firsts here. Do this right up front. You need a path forward. We need to have a way forward. I mean, the path forward, it could be reconciliation. That's the Christian worldview, where we have damaged relationships with each other, with God, whatever. But then we can repair it. Maybe we're talking about repairing. And this is where the past is a rudder, not an anchor. So whenever I talk about a problem in Asia, I'm always talking about a path forward. It's not just I'm giving fact, 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 and that's it. Or complaint, 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 that's it. It's like there's a path forward. And I'm always explaining what my path forward is. So when I share my facts, if I've got a, you know, getting to the point goes for a story and it goes for a fact. Well, that's going to go away in a few minutes. Oh, there it is. A fact. In fact, let me get down here and make my technology work. When you've got a fact, you need to say what the purpose of that fact is. Don't just say, that wall's blue. I mean, if you're arguing, explain, hi, I'm being interviewed. I'm explaining to you my idea, and this is my opinion, and I believe, and I think that we should, and you're going on, and you say, that wall is blue. It's like, oh, okay, the wall is blue. Okay, that's a fact. You've stated a fact. The wall is blue. So what's the point? You need to say that quickly, right away. That wall is blue. And I point that out because I want you to know that I believe that we can have colored walls. The walls don't all need to be white. We can, the wall behind me is beige, you know, but walls can be colored and painted. That's my point. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So that you stated your point. So you got a fact, you got a point. Oh, here's a story. Yesterday I saw another wall and it was green. See, that's my story. Okay. Well, what's the point? Here it's the same point. I'm trying to prove to you that we can paint walls. Painting walls is a good idea, you know, I suppose, in your argument. So when you talk about stories and facts, get to the point. Talk about a path forward and say what your conclusion is first. See, there's this alternate way of thinking. It's like this alternate reality. You've got Socrates over here where you've got every question gets answered with a question. That's someone, he thinks he's the teacher, the philosopher, who's going to condescend everybody. But then I'm arguing, get to the point first. Say what your conclusion is first, right out the door. Right in the beginning, explain a path forward, or at least state you're going to have a path forward. Everything needs to have a path forward. Everything. Everything needs to have a path forward. But there's this method used by amateurs. It's an amateur. I think I'm spelling this correctly. That's how I think amateur should be spelled. There's this, this is the amateur method. It's you give arguments first. First you give your arguments. And first you give your stories and your facts. And the path forward, it doesn't exist. We don't even know if there's a path forward or not. There, path forward, it doesn't exist. It's hiding behind my hat here in the video. This is also an audio podcast, just so you know. But the YouTube version has me drawing these pictures that kind of explain it. Pardon my French. There we have it. The amateur method will give arguments first without stating the conclusion. Now, I'm going to tell you a story. I was at the Moody Bible Institute. We were taking the philosophy class. And we were doing our unit on debates. Now, Moody is kind of a Harvard of Bible schools. It actually was a peer to Harvard back in the day when Harvard was a conservative Bible school, how it began. And others, Yale, I believe, also started as a Bible school. Moody was right there with them, but Moody didn't change. Harvard began as what Moody is still, is for the record. And it's a tuition-paid scholarship for everyone because they believe that Bible education shouldn't cost you money, that other Christians should help the younger Christians get a free Bible education. But you still have to pay for living. That was Moody's philosophy. So because of this, it's inexpensive. So it gets everybody, you know, like lots of people, everybody interested, applying, a lot of applicants. And when I was there, it was only it's like a 17% acceptance rate, people who could get into Moody. So these were kind of some extra smart people. And we're not, you know, these people really want to be there and they worked to get there. So these are smart people who stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning arguing about theology just because it's fun. Like that's the classroom we're looking at here. Well, my debate partner, we were on a team and it was Dr. Joseph Stoll Jr.'s niece, Emily Wheeler at the time was her name. I don't know if I hope she's gotten married and changed her last name. But Dr. Stoll was the president of Moody at the time. So the president's niece was my debate partner. Now, you don't get to be president of a school. I mean, his father was the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. So we're talking smart people here. Now, the debate teams, this is really an interesting debate. The debate teams were 3 versus 3. For some reason, we got on a team of only 2 people and the other team had 4. And nobody complained. We didn't mind. I mean, with Emily and I on the team, they were outmatched. Now, the guy on the other team was Caleb. He was the smartest guy in the classroom. In fact, he told me one time, as a fellow, my peer, fellow classmate, same age as I am, he said, "Jesse, you talk like someone who's thought a lot but not read much. You should read Kierkegaard." Like, that was the only conversation that Caleb, the guy on the other side of the team, I had. I very much respect that he told me that. I never did it, but I very much respect that he did. I'm not well read. I'm well talked and well traveled. Just, you know, so you know this. So I actually have problems reading. My blood pressure goes through the roof if I read too much, unless I smoke, which is, you know, what's going to kill you, smoking or reading? So, okay, you know, I quit reading because I smoking is bad for you, I guess. So that was where we were. And that super smart guy was the guy on the team against us. And they had four and we were only two. And they had a PowerPoint, the only debate team in the whole unit of all the teams going throughout a few weeks, that had a PowerPoint presentation, even for their rebuttal. Because they thought they knew what we were going to say. The topic was the problem of evil. Now, to summarize this, there's a paper written by a guy named J.L. Mackey who argues that there is not a God. He argues atheism or agnosticism, or I don't know what his point is. I didn't get that far. His point in the paper was, you've got three things. It's called the problem of evil. It's an old debate. And this, again, when I talk about whether there's a God, people ask me this question. I answer. It's like, this is an old question. You did not invent this question. This is an old question, and I've been through this. And the point is, here are three arguments in the Christian Bible. This is what he's saying. God is good, one. Two, God is all-powerful. Three, there is evil. Something, somewhere, something doesn't fit. One of these three has to go. Either God's not good, or he's not all-powerful, or there isn't evil. We know there's evil. So either God's not good, or he's not all-powerful. So the Christian God can't possibly exist. That's his argument. Now, then we got over up at, what is it? Is it Bethel, up in the Twin Cities? Dwight Perry was my preaching professor. He sat on the board I believe it was Bethel with, who was the guy that was branded the heretic? Pinnock. Clark, was it Clark Pinnock? And this open theism thing that he talked about, God doesn't know the future, was his argument. That was how he solved this problem. God doesn't know the future. My roommate, Ronnie Harris, whom you will hear more about in the Taiwan special, Ronnie Harris asked me in the dormitory bathroom one time, "What do you think about this open theism, Clark Pinnock guy, God doesn't know the future?" I said, "Well, if God doesn't know the future, then he guesses with 100% accuracy." So, you know, problem of evil. God is good. God is all powerful. Evil exists. Something's got to give. That's the argument in the problem of evil. C.S. Lewis wrote a book called The Problem of Pain. Anyone who knows anything about these arguments, this topic, this older than dirt, maybe not quite. No, maybe older than dirt. I think it goes back to before Earth was made. Older than dirt. This older than dirt argument. How can God be good and all-powerful and evil exist? Anyone who knows anything about this, who doesn't think that they invented the wheel and doesn't think they invented this argument, we'll look at C.S. Lewis's book, The Problem of Pain, and he'll know exactly what C.S. Lewis is talking about, because C.S. Lewis already made his point in the title. It's not a problem about evil. It's a problem of us having pain. That's the only reason we ask. In fact, that's why I came over to Asia, because unless we have pain in our lives, we never ask enough questions. You know, there's evil that evil could continue forever if nobody felt any pain. Nobody would care. And when someone else has a problem, but you don't feel their pain, you tend to not really care, right? Well, I didn't want to live that way, so that's why I'm over here in Asia. So we don't have a problem of evil. We have a problem of pain. And C.S. Lewis made his point out the door. As I say, conclude first. It's over here in my little drawing thing and my board. Conclude first. So, I didn't read The Problem of Pain for the prep. The night before, I had to teach Emily how Instant Messenger worked, signed her up on AOL Instant Messenger so we could talk past curfew. We were talking on the phone, me in my dorm, she in hers, trying to figure out how we were going to do this the next day. I kept asking myself, what's the issue? What's the core? What's the issue? What's the thing people are missing here? What's the issue? What's the issue? She said, Jesse, natural evil. You know, Adam sinned, therefore we have to have tornadoes. That doesn't make sense to a lot of people. Like, there's something in that. I was like, good, go run. But I'm trying to... So we didn't even work as a team. We talked. We talked and we gelled. Like, we could work together, Emily and I. We were coworkers as caterers. We would take her uncle, the president, his eggs in the morning and his mix of grapefruit juice and orange juice. We were together with all this. But on the debate, just we were headed in different directions. And so... Finally, for me, it occurred to me that God is not good. He's holy. The Bible doesn't describe God as having the kind of okay goodness of like the angel Michael or Michael. God is not simply merely good in the sense that he's the opposite of evil. Angels are good. In the sense that it's the opposite of evil, and they're equals, and they fight each other on an equal level. God is above that. He oversees it. He's so high, he's qualified to be the just and fair, benevolent referee. He oversees the battle between good and evil. God is not good. He is ultra good. He is holy. Holy is ultra good, or set apart, separate from. He's outside of, separate from, holy means separate. He's outside of the debate and the conflict between good and evil. And I finally realized that that's what's going on. And I realized that the Sunday morning churchian Bible students, my fellow classmates at Moody, would never figure that out, because even in the church, the smartest among us tend to only do what we're told. So, we went in there the next day, and Emily had totally messed up our outline. It had a Roman numeral 9 in front of our name and our campus little mailbox and the class and the title and the subpoints. Every point had a Roman numeral 9 in front of it, because she'd messed up something and didn't know how to fix it. And that was our handout. And... Well, we got up there, and she made her point about natural evil, and it was really amazing, but I was too full of myself to care. I love you, Emily. But you know, but she made great, great, amazing points. My point, I mean, it was natural evil. I mean, you can't say that there's a tornado and you, because Adam sinned. That doesn't make sense. Well, actually, the Bible does explain that all creation mourns, and that we are powerful leaders of the earth and the natural order. You know, humans are very effective with that. But It's a strong argument. There's a strong argument here that Christians need to explain in this debate. Okay. I got up and I said, if evil exists in the presence of a good God, that evil is continuing to offend, continuing to offend the very nature and character of that good God. It is an ongoing offense to who he is. And he must immediately annihilate that ongoing offense. And if he's all powerful, there's no competition. It would be gone. How can this not happen? I mean, now, all I did was explain the 3 points using a few big words and some dramatic tone of voice. That's all that was. I just explained the issue in a more detailed, more, I put skin on it. I made it more real. I made it land home. But all I did, God is good. God is there. You know, God is all powerful. There's evil. Something's got to give. I explained that. That's all I did. And then I said, if my opponent does not explain how this cannot happen, he has no case. And I sat down. And it was well under my time. Emily got up, did her thing. Then the other team got up. All 4 of them, you know, the first 2, they got up and they did their presentation and their rebuttal, which was on PowerPoint. Bad idea. Never prepare rebuttal on PowerPoint. Never do it. And we went out into the hallway for our break time, our talk time. And Emily and I didn't talk to each other. I said, don't you see? They didn't address the issue. They just ignored my question. So we win. And she said, don't, Jesse, tornadoes. We got it. So we didn't even talk during the break time because we both had our different brilliant ideas we were on. We went back in the room. I got up and I said that we have to explain how God, who's good, who's constantly being offended by this ongoing offense and presence of evil, why he doesn't annihilate it. It's offending who he is. Why doesn't he just boom, make it gone? And then my opponent didn't answer that. So he has no case. And all the students are starting to look around like, wait a minute, he's right. And, you know, and I sat down. Emily got up and did her thing. Caleb got up, had the last word, tried his best. And the students, these Moody students, voted in our favor 15-8, and we got an A on the debate. And all it was is that, you know, that goes back to the video I did a long time ago during a vlog every day in April thing that I teamed up with some vloggers to do. The way to win a debate. One is, actually, I forgot what I know that one of you got a, you've got a, it helps to be right. It helps, but you don't have to be. And two, you must know the real reasons why the right conclusion is right. You must know the real reasons why. And three, you have to believe that we can know the truth. If you don't believe we can know the truth, then you're not going to be strong in a debate. You've got to believe that we're able to figure out what the truth is. The truth is not just me versus you and we convince someone and that's the truth. The truth can be known. It's higher than us. If you don't believe that we can know the truth, you're not going to be a very strong debater. And, but it helps to be right, but it's not always necessary. And, but that of these three, the most important thing is to know that, the real reasons why the right conclusion is the right conclusion. And that goes back to the conclusion that I have. Make your conclusion first. And then as for your facts, get to the point. We need to know what those are. Now, the professor said that normally in a class, it would be about 50-50, 49-51, just over 50-50 in the votes. The class would vote on who won the debate. And, you know, who was most convincing anyway. And he said, usually they go 50-50, almost 50-50, just in favor of the typical Christian Bible school teaching, because it's a Bible school. He said, that's how most debates go. We won 15-8. It's almost, basically, that's 2-1 against the Bible teaching because we did a good job. Now I don't believe that there's a problem with evil. I mean, evil's not good, but the problem of evil is not a problem for me. God is holy and patient. It's right in the Bible. Peter wrote it. He says, God is not slow as some count slowness. He is patient toward you, hoping that none should perish, but that all would come to repentance. God is patient. So, I mean, if God annihilated evil, he'd have to annihilate all of us. Because frankly, we all do things that are bad at times. The question is not, why doesn't God annihilate evil? The question is, why don't we already? The question is not, did God know what was going to happen before he made the earth? The question is, why would a God, knowing what was all the terrible things were going to happen, create the earth anyway, even though he knew that he would have to go to a cross and die for all of us in order for all of us beloved to that he loves to be able to live? Why would God create all of this, knowing that he would have to go to the cross to save us because he loves us? Why would he do that? It's because he's loving. So that answered the more important question. But you can only understand this if you know how to think about issues properly. And so, as I say, conclude. Say what the conclusion is first. So I was talking with my friend, one of my Moody student buddies, Jedediah Pascal, and Jed was giving me some theological thing. It was some idea from the church fathers. He wanted to know what Jesse Steele thought. And he was going on and he was doing, I love you, Jed. He was listing, doing the amateur thing. He was listing his arguments. He was going on argument after argument after argument, story after story after story. But he still hadn't told me what the theological opinion was. And finally, I said, Jed, you're talking to the guy who convinced 2 out of 3 Moody students that God doesn't exist because the devil does. Just tell me your conclusion, and I will come up with a better argument in your favor than you would. So, and he finally laughed and said, okay. Later on, I asked my good buddy from my childhood, his father's a lawyer who actually argued before the Supreme Court once. And he said, it's no big deal. My dad actually asked, did you ever argue at the Supreme Court? Yeah, I still remember there. Our dads had been friends for over 20 years, and we'd never known that he had argued before the Supreme Court once. And I asked that lawyer, our family friend, what he thought about me winning against in that debate. And he said, well, Jesse, it's much easier to argue against the opinion that you hold because you don't have anything personal at stake. So you're able to think objectively and do a good job. This is the perspective that I come from. This is my background when I ask someone a question, why I want to know what they think about something. This is why I want them to get to their point, because this has been my life. You better believe that was not the first debate that I had in my life. And you better believe, you can imagine what high school conversations must have been like with Jesse Steele, our Bible study leader. We called it the Areopagus, something or other. We called the president of the school board and asked him some questions. We would go through and talk about issues. We would pretend to debate opposite opinions with each other to understand stuff. This was my childhood and my upbringing. And when I'm talking to someone, if that person starts to do the Socrates thing on me, first of all, I think that person doesn't know that they're not my teacher. And, you know, Rob Bell would do that a lot. He would get accused of that anyway. That people would debate him on radios and podcasts or something, and he would answer their challenges by simply asking a question. Always a question, question, question. It's like, well, that works a mutual consent in a teaching situation, but that doesn't work in a debate. And it was like Rob didn't know that. So technically he was making an amateur argument because he was misapplying the Socrates thing. Now, when Rob Bell is teaching his congregation, well, the Socrates thing works. I mean, because people are there. I mean, Rob knows stuff. Rob's a smart guy. And I mean, I was there. I mean, Mars Hill Bible Church was in my backyard 45 minutes away, and I would go there. I talked to Rob and shook his hand a couple times, and I even gave him a letter, a very polite letter. But that's another story. But, you know, we knew Rob, you know, people in the youth group I grew up with changed and started attending Rob's teachings, and they were part of his church before they walked out on Christianity altogether. And I'll go back to say that we need to have conclusions. We need to explain what our conclusions are up front. And Rob draws a lot of criticism because he's just not up front with his conclusions. That's all. But the thing is, many Christian leaders get angry with Rob Bell, but they don't know why they're angry with him. They're just, something's not right about him. Well, I can tell you why. You've got to, you know, conclusion first. Get to the point. Say the purpose of your facts and story. So if you want to make Jesse think, if someone wants to provoke Jesse to think, first of all, don't try. Jesse's been through that. I've been through that stuff. All my life, people have been failing at trying to get me to think. The times that people are able to provoke me to think are when they just give me their conclusion first. And I'm like, oh, that'd be an interesting set of arguments, okay, that would support that conclusion. Now I'm thinking. And if they just get to the point, tell me the purpose of their story. I want to know the story, but I want to know the purpose of it. And tell me what's the path forward look like? How do we become better? How do we not just complain and burn the world down? How do we, you know, not have a Pyrrhic victory, a P-Y-R, Pyros, like fire, a victory over the ashes, you know? So what? You destroy everything. That's not really a victory. How do we have a path forward, not just a Pyrrhic victory? So When I was in Asia, I'll tell you the story as someone who's been in Asia. I'm over here in Asia. And as I've already established in the driving third world legal system video, Taiwan has a demonstrable third world legal system in many ways. Well, there was this wealthy person, a friend of mine. I'm the American, so everybody wants to talk to the American. So wealthy people, ooh, the American. I have American friends. See, you know, there's some of that. But, you know, I mean, I kind of had the same thing. Oh, Asians. I'm going to be with the Asians. So, you know, there's some cross-cultural fascination with each other because we long to love and know each other. So I become this wealthy person's friend. And I've had this happen many times. And as I explained early in the Taiwan series, I really believe Asian shame culture is a collection of personality disorders. It's not just a cultural difference, it's a mental illness, and it needs treatment on a society-wide scale. It needs counseling. It does not need us to just bow down to it. And when you have someone that's mentally ill in a home, they can get abusive towards other people, and eventually it becomes like what we might say abused wife syndrome. Anyone can kind of start to bow down and go along with the one who's the tyrant and the dominator in the home, whether it's a parent or a child that the parents don't hold in check. And that's most of the people in Asian culture have that abused wife syndrome. They're just kind of going along with these, you know, 20% of the people that have this. They're all throughout society. They're bosses, they're teachers, especially professors and company bosses. Very, very abusive. Lots of personality disorders, my lay opinion about all that. And I explain that in early on in the Taiwan special series. So we've got this, in my opinion, we've got this society-wide personality disorder structure. I'm not going to call it a complex because that's other psychobabble, but we've got this society-wide personality disorder structure. And then you've got a third world legal system, as I've explained in other videos. And so here this wealthy person is from this culture. And I talked about the need for democracy. I said, I can approach the government and I can, you know, give them a suggestion or something. You know, we were talking about government. And this person said, Jesse, see, Socrates time. This person went into Socrates mode. This person's gonna make Jesse think. This person's gonna get Jesse to have a new idea. This person's gonna get Jesse to ask questions that he's never asked before. See, they're gonna get Jesse. Yeah, right. Good luck. People do that, but not by trying, only by living their real lives. Because I'm much more interested in reality than in someone trying to be smarter than me. And this person, Jesse, don't you know that the way it works is, I'm exaggerating a little bit because I want you to know that I don't really believe this. Don't you know? I give money to the politician. I give money to the people in the legislature and the president and the leaders in the government when they're getting in election time during the campaign. Excuse me, pardon my French. I give them money. So after they get elected, I call them on the phone and they're more likely to listen to me. You see, that's how it works. I know you never thought of that before, but that's how it should work. And this person told me this, like they're trying to help me understand something that this stupid American never thought of before. Because I'm wrong. My country that manufactures and designs and sells their F-16s, my country that's the economy that they need so badly, free trade for, my country that's got the English that they want to make their own national language, my country doesn't know anything. We do it wrong. This wealthy person knows everything. Every idea I have about democracy and fairness is stupid, ignorant, and my problem is I don't know. And this person's gonna help gently teach me the right way. That actually happened. And it happens all the time with me with this shame culture. Over here in AI, I've been dealing with this gently, indirectly, trying to send me into the direction of to learn how I can, you know, to see their Asian way of doing things. And it never occurred to them that maybe I've already heard the whole thing. And the reason I don't follow that idea isn't because I never heard it. And it isn't because I need to learn something. It's because I've decided that their idea is wrong and unethical and immoral. This wealthy person's not teaching me some brilliant new idea about how politics should work. This person's putting forth an argument for the swamp, for bribery, for corruption in politics. That's what this person's arguing. And I'm just like, talk about ignorant. Talk about making a fool of yourself. Talk about acting like you know everything when you so obviously don't. So it's like the person giving a demonstration to tie your shoes and they do it totally wrong, but they just think they taught everybody something. What a dunce. What a dunce. And I've dealt with that with shame culture all over the place here in Taiwan, constantly, constantly. And what it comes down to is, the way I deal with it is I conclude first. I make my point. I explain a healthy path forward. I believe we can move forward. I don't believe we've got to surrender to the mentally ill. I believe that people with a mental illness can get help, mostly for the most part. I believe whoever, I don't decide who's mentally ill, but if someone is, I believe we can help them, for the record. I believe in telling a story, but saying the purpose of the relevance for why I'm telling the story and being upfront about it, not acting like an amateur who's got to just kind of weasel around with my arguments and stories because I don't know how to really actually debate and persuade people. I say what my conclusion is first. I'm a straight shooter. In Satois's five modes of communication, I'm a leveler. And how do you talk to a leveler? Level back. Look it up. Satois, it's like satire. It looks like satire, S-A-T-I-R-E. It's, I believe it's French. The five modes of communication. There's blamer mode, computer mode, placator mode, and leveler mode and distractor mode. And you can look them up. When I'm in Asia, a lot of the time, people would do their little indirect. It's not really Socrates, it's actually Confucius. Okay, it's the Socrates of Asia. They're wearing the philosopher's hat. Not this nice Burmy that I've got here. This hat, I think, was something that was invented in Birmingham, for the record. Instead of wearing the Burmy, they're wearing the philosopher's hat and beard and cloak. And they're going to teach Jesse. And they don't notice it when I answer them directly and I ignore their little indirect thing. I don't answer back indirectly, so they don't get it. They couldn't possibly believe that I meant exactly what I said, that my words were my meaning. They, because we don't say what we mean in Asia, right? What is Jesse hinting at? Oh, Jesse must not get it. He's not hinting at agreeing with me, so therefore he doesn't get it. And this is every day over here. I see what their point is, and I level right back and ignore it and keep going. And they think I didn't get their point, when really, I'm not the immature. They didn't get my point. And so I want people to get to theirs.